All right. Welcome to Computer Science 50, Walkthrough 1. My name is Keita Uchiyama, and I'll be your host for this show. Not a show, but walkthrough. I'm one of the system administrators of the course. I'm not a TF or a CA, but I'll be leading these walkthroughs every week on Monday at this time, 6 to 7:30. So what are these walkthroughs? So this walkthrough is supposed to guide you through the problem set, the standard edition, actually. So how many of you have already downloaded and looked at the problem set? Okay, so pretty much all of you? That's good. Okay, and so I'll be going through each of the pages of the problem set, going through each of the problems and seeing what questions you might have, and also like guiding you through each of the code sections. So I won't be actually writing the code, unfortunately, but I'll be writing the pseudocode, or I'll be telling you what problems you might encounter in the problem set. So this session is videotaped. It's taped by Chris Thayer there. Thank you very much. And it'll be online on cs50.net, the course's website, around Wednesday. So if you do, if you look at the problem set on Friday and you, or on maybe not on Friday, who looks at problem sets on Friday, the weekend, and you feel like you have a problem with the problem set, you know, you want to have some questions answered, you want to have a guiding hand, a walkthrough, then please do come to the live session, because Wednesday is rather late to start your problem set. So do come to the live session on Monday. But if you can't make it, there's always the video on cs50.net. So I'll try to make the sessions as interactive as possible and as interesting as possible. So that should hopefully encourage more people to come. And if you have any questions, do please feel free to stop me and ask away. I'll try to remember your names, but I'm really bad at names, so I probably won't remember them, but I will. So thanks. And okay, so most of you had already looked at the problem set. So we'll start from page one, which is SSHing to NICE. Now, what does that mean? So this is what you have to do for our problem set one, basically. First, you have to SSH to NICE. I'll explain what that means. Configure your FAS account. This is very easy. Just type in two commands and press Enter. And we'll create a hi world application, not a hello world application, but hi world, thanks to David's interest in this internet meme thing this semester. And ISBN checking. We'll be looking over C variables, loops, basic math operators, including modulo, which is basically the remainder operator in C and other programming languages. And we'll also be making a change-making program, or rather, you'll be making the change-making program. And this will involve something called a greedy algorithm, which I'll also explain and discuss later. And then at the end, we'll be going over Mario, which is the last question on the problem set, which basically involves creating a series of blocks on the screen. So do you have any questions right now? Can I continue? OK. So first, I'm going to go through SSHing to NICE. So who can tell me what SSH is? Yeah, secure shell. So SSH stands for secure shell, and it's basically an upgraded version of the old Telnet protocol. And it's basically what it does is that you connect from one computer, the client, to the server, which in this case is a series of servers located in the basement of the Science Center called nice.fast.harvard.edu. So I think David explained how the server tries to get you on the most the least used machine, but you don't need to worry about those details. Just connecting to nice.fast will let you connect to the least popular machine. So I'll show you how to do that. So how many of you have already tried SSHing to NICE? Okay, so most of you. Can I just gloss over it then? Okay. So how many of you are using Macs? Okay, quite a bit of you. And Windows? Okay, and Linux? Or any other operating system? Okay, so this is the Mac OS X terminal. If you've all used it, then, I mean, if you're on a Mac and you've already SSH'd to NICE, then I presume you've used the terminal. So I'll just recap what you have to do. We type in SSH, skip to the top. SSH, your username, in this case I'll use cs50 at nice.fast.harvard.edu. And then when you type enter, you have to enter your password. And then you get the prompt. So are we all familiar with using the using the terminal, or are we still trying to grab, you know, commands from midair? Oh, are you pretty familiar with it? Or yeah, okay. So I'll still explain the commands that I use in the walkthrough, and hopefully you'll catch on to these, because it's not something that you should read up or anything. It's something you catch while you do this. So I've SSH'd to NICE. That was really easy because it's Mac OS 10, which is a Unix operating system, which means that it's basically built on the same kind of thing as these servers that in the Science Center are made of. These are like industry standard operating systems that let you do this kind of thing with the program called SSH. So I typed in SSH, username at nice.fast.harvard.edu, and then press enter. So it's really easy on the Mac. So in case anyone watching the video hasn't SSH'd on Windows, I'll just show that. Okay, so this is on Windows. It's actually my machine in my dorm room. I'm using another program called Remote Desktop, which is Microsoft's version of SSH. It's not as arcane as SSH, but and it works. So there are two main programs that you can use to SSH from Windows, and one of them is SecureCRT, which is FASIT's recommended software, and it's installed on all the Science Center machines and all the kiosks. There's also PuTTY, which is an open source SSH application, which might be more powerful. It might have more features, and it's slightly this screen is slightly difficult to use because there's this load save delete thing, which takes about a few minutes to get used to. But these two programs they basically do the same thing. They let you connect to an SSH server. So if you want the details, there are some PDFs available on the CS50 website under resources. If you click on this resources link and scroll down to, SSH, how to SSH to nice.fast from macOS, from Windows using PuTTY, from Windows using SecureCRT. So if you have any problems SSHing from Windows, then do please take a look at these PDFs. They're on the course website. Okay, so there's also SFTP, which you might or not have heard of. Has anyone heard of SFTP and what it is? No?
Secure FTP.
Yeah, it's Secure FTP. It's the secure version of FTP, which is the file transfer protocol. It basically lets you transfer files from your client to the server. And you'll find it useful if you say you write your programs on your computer and you you want to put them on the server later. Instead of using Vim or Nano or Emacs to write your code directly on the server, you can just do it on your home machine and then transfer them. So to transfer these files, you use the something called an SFTP client. And for example, on macOS, you might use CyberDuck, which is a nice open source application to do that, or Windows using SecureFX, which is also, again, FASIT's recommended thingy. Application. So is everyone okay with that? Can it, it's on the course website, so it shouldn't take too long. Okay. So with that said, so once you log on to NICE, unfortunately FASIT hasn't set up these your user accounts to with the appropriate programs for CS50. So what David's done is he's installed a bunch of programs in the CS50 account. To make your lives easier to put the right libraries in the right places and to put the right versions of software in the right places. So you have to do a couple of things with your NICE account once you've logged in. And you only need to do this once. Don't do this more than once. So it's in the problem set specs, but there are two commands that you have to run. The first one is user local bin fix dot files. This is on page 2 of your problem set. I think the problem set starts from page 0, but it's on page the one labeled 2. So this command, user local bin fix dot files, is basically a program written by FASIT that fixes your dot files. And your dot files are some hidden files in your FAS account. And basically, so your account ship's broken, so you have to fix it with fix.files. I don't know why that is what's the case, but it just works that way. So you have to run this command, and it's really easy. You just type it in, and then you hit enter. And then you should get, you might get some output. I'm not going to run it here because it's on the CS50 account, but that's the command. And then there's also the CS50 specific setup command, which is cs50/pub/bin/cs50setup. So can anyone tell me why this, what this symbol is? Yeah, it's the tilde. And what does it mean? OK, so the tilde is used in Unix or these Linux, Unix-like machines to denote a user. So when you say tilde CS50, it means the directory that houses CS50's accounts. You can think of it as like my documents on Windows or documents on Mac OS X. So basically, go inside the CS50's account folder. CS50 is an account, just like, say, Uchiyama FS or anything FS. And CS50/pub/bin/CS50setup. CS50's setup is a program that David wrote in a programming language called Perl, which basically goes through your preferences in your FAS account and then sets it up with the right paths and various settings so you can use it for CS50. So you type that in, hit enter, and then I think you get some output. But after you've run that, you can type simply CS50 check. And then I'll scroll up. CS50 check. And if you ran it properly, you should get this message. You are configured for CS50 and you are on nice.fast.harvard.edu. If you don't get this message, then it might be a problem with your FAS account, or it might be with a problem with what you typed in. So try typing those two commands in again. And if that fails, then do email us at help@cs50.net. OK, does anyone have any questions about setting up your FAS account? I know it's not a terribly interesting topic. It's just a bunch of commands. I'm sorry. But yeah, if everyone's OK with that, we'll go on. OK, so next, once you've configured your FAS account, you're ready to actually log into your account. Oh, so one thing, once you do set up your account, you do have to log out and then log back in again. So you can't just continue with your old session, so I'll do that. You could do that by typing an exit or equivalently log out. These two do the same thing. Or I like to press Control D, which does the same thing. It's a logout thing. OK, so once you've logged back in again, which I will do, the problem set encourages you to create a directory called CS50 in your home directory. And you have to do that because if the directory isn't called CS50, then you can't submit the problem set. So how do I create a new directory in my account? Pardon?
Use cd,
the cd command. That's close, but not. Yeah, make dir. So this is spelled mkdir. Make directory CS50. And then nothing seems to have happened. So how do we get into the CS50 account? Yeah, the cd account. Cd command. OK, so once we're in the CS50 directory, we can, I just did that out of habit, but we can see what's inside the CS50 directory by using the ls command, the list command. And that basically lists everything inside the directory. If you type in ls space dash l, then that's the command for listing each of the files and folders in your current directory. And if you put in A, that also shows hidden files. But you don't need to worry about that, because there shouldn't be any hidden files being created unless you're using Emacs, which might create some backup files, which can be seen using lsla. OK, so once you've created the CS50 directory, what we need to do is create another directory called pset1 inside CS50. So make sure after you've created the CS50 directory, you have to cd into CS50, or otherwise you'll be creating pset1 in the root of your home directory, which you don't want to do. So your directory should be CS50/pset1. So once we're inside CS50, we can mukdar again with pset 1. And then we can go inside pset 1. And then we have our empty directory. OK, so far, so good. Pretty simple. OK, so once we're inside, we can try out a bunch of commands. So one thing that's noted in this in the problem set on page 5 is that the dot dot operator in the terminal or in SSH has a special meaning. Is anyone familiar with what dot dot means? Okay, so dot dot is a special notation in Unix-like computers. When I say Unix-like computers, I mean, for example, Linux, Mac OS X, that kind of thing. So if I type in dot, actually it's the same on Windows as well. If I type cd dot dot, then I go up one directory to the parent of the current directory, which is cs50. So dot dot is the one above the current directory. So let's say we have a folder called my folder in my documents. If you were in my folder and you cd'd up, then you would go to my documents. So it's the same analogy here with directories. Okay, and there's also another one, which is the dot operator, cd dot. And as you can see, nothing's happened because dot means the current working directory. So it can be useful sometimes, but it's not obviously useful. So why am I showing you this? For no good reason at all, actually, because it's in the problem set. Okay, so now we've done that. So shall we create a hello world or hi world application first to get ourselves warmed up? So I'm in the CS50 directory right now, and I need to create a hello.c application. So I'm going to use Vim, which is one of the text editors, but Nano works the same, and Emacs is also a powerful text editor that you can use. So I'm writing my first C application. What do I start off with? Pardon? Yeah. Pound sign include. These include external files that other people have written. So we'll be using standardio.h and cs50.h. Which are two files that have been installed in the operating system. Okay, and then we have to write some code here. So, what is one thing that you have to have in a C program to make it run? What is one function that has to be there? The main function, yeah. So the main function is what the operating system looks for in a program when it's told to run a program. So if it doesn't find the main function, then it's not going to do anything. So I'm going to write the main. So the declaration of the main function is usually like this, int main, int argc, char star, argv, array, or just brackets. Now, but you can just copy and paste this from any other application. It's not going to be an academic dishonesty thing or anything if you just copy that part. So what can I? How can I print out "Hi World" to the screen? Printf, yeah. Printf, and what do you want to say? Oh, "Hi World." Okay. Okay, so is this okay? Anything else you want to change in the program? Yeah, backslash n. So this isn't required, but if you want to, it's just for aesthetic reasons, backslash n is a good idea. So to compile our program, what command do we use? Yep, gcc, and then we type in the source code name, which is hello.c. This case. Okay, it compiles. So if we ls now, we can see our new file a.out, which is the program that we just made. So a.out, oh, hi world. So it looks like it works. That was pretty simple. Okay. So now that we've done that, that's just the first step of problem set one. We can build on what we just made in hello.c using the main function, the includes at the top, to create the rest of our programs that we have to make for this problem set. Okay, so let's see. Okay, I guess I'll go to page 7, which is the next section of the problem set. It's called I've been reading books. It's basically a program that checks an ISBN number in any book to see if it's correct or not. So has everyone actually read the problem set or yes? Okay, so the problem set talks about ISBN in very long detail on two pages. Basically, so we all know what the ISBN number is, right? So it's on the back of the book, on any book, that allows shopkeepers to manage the books in their warehouses or in their shops. So the one thing about the ISBN is that it's not just a number. So it's 10 digits long, if we discount the ISBN 13, which recently came out. It's a 10-digit number, but only the first 9 digits are significant. And the 10th digit is called a check digit, yeah. So what is a check digit? Can anyone tell me what a check digit is? I mean, why have an extra digit? I mean, 9 is enough, right? Pardon? Different editions. That's a good try, but it's not really what the check digit is for. Yeah?
To make sure the first 9 digits were read correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. So the thing about ISBNs is that it's always written above the barcode. So when you read a barcode, you might have errors in reading the image on the book. So you want to verify that it's correct by looking at the check digit and seeing if you read all the numbers correctly. So the thing about the check digit is that if any of the first 9 numbers weren't read correctly, then the check digit check will fail and will know that the barcode wasn't read correctly, and then you can read it again. So the ISBN is actually very simple. It's just it's this very very short one line algorithm that calculates what the check digit is. So Let's take a look at the ISBN and see what we can do with C, no pun intended. Okay. Okay, so we have an ISBN number here. Where is it? 0789736136. Okay, so this is an ISBN number, and we can see that there are 9 digits. These are the significant digits. And the last one, 6, here is the check digit, which checks to see if the first 9 digits were read correctly. And but to read this to check that the ISBN was read correctly, we need to do some calculations on the first 9 digits to get the 10th digit. And you can check this 10th digit to see if the first 9 digits were correctly read. So I'm going to skip ahead and then go to the top of page 8 in the problem set, which shows an easier version of the algorithm that we'll be using in our problem set. Because although you can use the one on page 7, it's much easier to use just the version on page 8. So how do we go about calculating whether this was read correctly? Can anyone tell me how we can start checking this? So what you do, as Raymond said, is you take the first digit, multiply by 1, add that to the second product, which is 2 times 7, 3 times 8, 4 times 9, and so on, until you get to the 9th digit. And when you get these the sum of the products, then you can modulo it by 11. And what do I mean by modulo it by 11? Mm-hmm. So mod or modulo gets the remainder of any division. So for example, if we say 5, sorry. Can you see this? Is it too light? 5 mod 2. What's 5 mod 2? It's 1, yeah. And why is it 1? So 5 divided by 2 is 2 to remainder 1, so 5 mod 2 is 1. And in C, we can write mod using the percent sign. 5% 2 equals 1. So the thing to remember about the mod, the modulo divisor is that you don't get the actual division, the result of the division. To do that, of course, you have to do the regular 5 divided by 2. So now we've got these, so we got the sum of the products, and then we moduloed it by 11, and then we got the remainder, which should be 6 if the first 9 digits were correct. So we're going to implement this in C, and as I said, that was the actual algorithm. There's also this easier algorithm that David has written on page 8, and what that involves is, so you do the same thing with the first 9 digits. And then to the sum that you got adding all the nine digits up and multiplying each of them by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you also do the same thing to the last digit, the 10th digit. You multiply that by 10. And then you also add that product to the rest of the sums. And then you should get a different number, which if you divide that by 11, or if you modulo that by 11, you should get, what should you get? According to the algorithm? Zero, yeah. So this is a modified version of the algorithm. And so we were discussing this, I was discussing this with my roommate, and we came up to the conclusion that it works because if we're over by 1a, then adding 10a makes it over 11a, which is divisible by 11. So basically, we're going one step further. By making the number divisible by 11, let's leave that. can anyone explain it more eloquently than I can? Why this works? It's not a core part of the problem set, but it's useful. Okay, if not, then we'll just skip ahead. So we've got this algorithm that can nicely calculate our check digit. No, not check calculate a check digit, sorry. That can check the ISBN for correctness. So if we have all 10 digits already, then we can use this algorithm to check that the whole thing was correct. And so how would we implement this in C? So what David wants, what the course wants, is to have a program that makes the user enter an ISBN number, 10 digits, without any of the hyphens or anything. And then it'll say yes or no in capital letters. So what do we first need to do when we want to ask a user for an ISBN? Pardon? Get integer? There's one gotcha there. Can we use integer? Yeah, the ISBN is too long. So the ISBN number is actually, it's a very large number if you treat it as an integer. And it's not going to fit in the 2 to the power of 32 minus 1 limit that the int, the signed int has, the unsigned int has. So we're going to have to use another data type. Can anyone think of a better one that would fit this large, really large number? Long, yes? Yeah, long. So long is actually not long enough for this purpose. We have to use long, which is written as two words, long. And this is a very long data type in C. And it'll let us store this really long number in it. So how do we get the user's input? What function do we use? Not get int, but Yeah, so there's actually a function in the CS50 library called getLongLong, which will let us read a long long from the terminal or the shell. So how do we so we use this function in what way? How can we get the user's input into our program? What might we want to do? Does anyone remember variables? Please? Yeah, Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's great. We can, as Raymond said, we have to assign a variable maybe called ISBN, and then we read getLongLong into it. Wrong one. I'll just write here. Can everyone see this part? Okay. So long. Get float. Sorry. Long. Let's choose a variable name. ISBN equals get long. Okay, so if we have this in our code, then we can simultaneously get the user's input and also read the ISBN into a variable called ISBN. Okay, so once we've got that data, what can we do with it? So how can we implement this this checking algorithm that we discussed earlier in C? Does anyone have any ideas, any first steps towards implementing this? No? So what would a human do? What did I do when I went over each of the digits? Yeah, so I went through each of the digits from the beginning to the end. So the first problem that we might encounter here is how do we get each of the digits in a C long? How can we do that? Because this isn't a string, so we can't just read individual digits from the number. It's a number, so how do we get it? Yep. Well, yeah. So we divide each of the numbers by 10. But if we just divide the numbers by 10, then we're just going to get rid of each of the digits one by one. Can you all see that? So if we have a number like 3613, if we divide this by 10, then we're cutting each of the numbers off, right? So we can work from the back to the front by dividing each of the numbers by 10. But if we only divide the numbers, then we're just getting rid of numbers. We're not actually getting the numbers. So how do we get the numbers?
Mod,
yeah. So our friend mod comes in again. So if we take, say, 3613, let's say this is our number, and then we mod that by 10, then if we're going to get rid of this number by division. And then, So we first have to mod it. So 3613 divided by 10 is 361 remainder 3. So we get this digit using mod, and then we can get rid of it by division. Okay, so can you all see how that might work in C? How you could maybe go home tonight and write it? Write this part? Yep.
Wasn't there something in lecture where he mentioned like a division that gave you the remainder?
So as far as I know, there's no function that does both mod and division at the same time, because they're two separate operators in C. Yeah. So you first have to modulo it and then divide it. Make sure you get the order right, or you'll get rid of digits and then read the next one, which you don't want to do. Okay, so we can get the next digit in an int, or anything that you want. But in this case, we'll use an int because it's going to fit in an int. One digit will always fit in an int. So for example, in our first iteration, we're going to get the last digit, this 10th digit, and we're going to get the modulo of it, and then we'll get 6, and then we'll get 3, and then we'll get 1. So how do we implement this in C if we want to go from the back to the front? Yes, Riren? Yeah, we need a loop. Specifically, what kind of loop might you want to use? Yeah, a for loop. So actually any kind of loop technically works in any situation. A for loop would work the best here because you want to go from the 10th digit back to the front. So we've all seen writing for loops forwards, right? Has David shown this in lecture? Yeah, so for example, for int I equals 1, I So we can go forwards in our for loop. We can also go backwards in our for loop. So if we start off with, say, 10, and then want to count down to 0 or 1, we can say, and then this will be replaced by not plus plus, but minus minus, yeah, the decrement operator. This is int I equals 10. This is the first part of a for loop is the initialization section. So we're initializing a new variable called I inside the for loop called I, and then we're initializing it to 10. Okay, so do you have any questions with this for loop? Okay, yeah? Oh, anything is okay.
Do you have a zero on the front?
Mm-hmm.
It
will get rid of the zero because that's how the operating system works. So get long long will just get the input from the user and then dump it into data, and in that process it'll get rid of the zero. So can anyone answer that? How would we deal with the leading zero?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. What's your name?
Patan.
Thank you. So as Patan said, if you don't actually need to deal with the zero, because when you do zero divided by the number of the digit, or divided by 10 rather, it's just going to return zero. So we don't need to do anything with the leading zero. Thanks. Sorry, I was forgetting to ask people's names to remember. But I'll ask from now on. Okay. So do you think, do we all have a good sense of what we might do with the ISBN checking? No? I see some nodding, not shaking heads. Okay, so what are you confused about? So we've got the for loop, which basically loops through each of the numbers. And then what do we want to do with each of the numbers that we get by modulo? Yeah, we want to add them. We want to first multiply it with the number of the digit, and then we can add them to a running sum. So you want to define your running sum outside of the for loop, of course, because you don't want to modify it. You want to initialize it outside of the for loop because you don't want to keep on initializing it. So for example, above the for loop, we'll have, for example, int running sum. And then we can initialize this number. And then we should be able to duplicate this algorithm in C. What are you confused about? Does anyone have any specific parts that you're confused about, or are you just generally confused?
Pardon?
Is Yeah, I is the digit that we're currently on.
So then you'd multiply each one by I?
Yeah, we would. Because we're going from... Well, yeah, because we're going down, yeah. Okay, so... I don't know. Is there anything that I should go over? That are there any questions that you have about the algorithm? Yes,
well,
Jason.
I mean, the next step then is just we can't tell us, but is it like I times, and then you like I plug in the next number.
So I times the modulo that we got. So inside the for loop, we're going to get the modulo of the current digit, right?
Right.
So we can multiply that by I, and then add it to the running sum. So the for loop will do that for you 10 times, if you code it that way. Yes?
Should they count for, I know it says here to assume that you're given, that somebody will input 10 digits, but
mm-hmm.
Should we say, you know, someone inputs like 4 digits, like,
yeah.
Is that even a possibility and they should return some kind of, you know, invalid response, or you don't have to be concerned about that?
So I think you do have to be concerned about that. Get long long would enable you to get any kind of long long. So anything from minus big number to plus big number. So it's not going to deal with short numbers because it doesn't know that you're reading in an ISBN. So how might we deal with this? Oh, okay. Okay, that's good. I think I read that before. For simplicity, assume that the user's input will be exactly 10 decimal digits. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, because if we don't have that, then we're going to have some trouble because we don't know if the ISBN might be 0000000. And in that case, it might still be a valid ISBN. So we don't need to deal with that. The user's always going to input a 10-digit number in this program. Okay, so that's a good point you brought up, because in programs, you really need to worry about input validation, which is basically the process of going through a user's input to making sure that everything checks out correctly. Because there are two things that can happen. The user might just be dumb, or the user might actually be malicious, and they might be trying to crash your code. And in that case, especially in later lectures, where we'll discuss PHP, it's very important to check that the user is inputting the correct values, or they might really mess up your system. For example, you know, they might buy two things from your online shopping cart instead of one with half the amount of money. Okay, so is everyone okay with ISBN now? Can I go on? Okay, thanks. Let's see. How are we doing on time now? Okay. So I think Chris needs to stop the tape for a few minutes. So we'll stop here for a break, and then we'll come back in 7 minutes. Is that okay? At 6:57, and then we'll continue with Change and Mario. Yeah. If you have any questions, I can answer them after class. But there's a class coming in, so let's go outside and we can meet in the red sofa place. Okay, so I think Jason had a question about the ISBN and how we're going to go towards the front. So I mentioned using mod to read the digit, but as I said, you can't actually modify the number by taking the modulo, because taking the modulo is just an information kind of thing. It doesn't really do anything to the number. So to actually to iterate from the back to the front, you have to do, for example, if ISBN was called ISBN, then we'd have to do ISBN divided by 10, and then assign that value to ISBN. So ISBN, So ISBN equals ISBN divided by 10 would let us go to the next digit in our next iteration of the for loop. And remember, we'd have to do that in the for loop as well, because we're going over each of the 10 digits 10 times. Okay, is that good? Okay, so with that done, we're now going on to the change program, which is on page 12, page 10. called Time for Change. So the objective of this program is to get some number from a user. So for example, 9.71, and then return the number of coins that would be required to get the correct amount of change that was not the input. The input is we have to tell the program how much change we owe. So we're the shopkeeper, and we're going to give change to the customer. So for example, we owe them 41 cents. So we're going to type in 0.41 or 0.41 in the program, and then the program will tell us how many coins required if we had all denominations of the US coins, 25 cents, 10 cents, 5 cents, 1 cent. Is that correct? So that's the program. The program is not going to return how many of each we need. For example, it's not going to say we need 4 quarters. It's just going to get the total number of coins that we need if we had all the denominations. So we're going to use something called a greedy algorithm. Can anyone tell me what a greedy algorithm is? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you take the largest bytes possible from our problem. For example, 41 cents. We'll take huge bytes out of it, the biggest possible, which in the US coinage system is 25 cents, or maybe a dollar, but we're not going to use a dollar here. So we're going to take 25 cents, and then what can we do there? After we've taken 25 cents from 41 cents? How can we, what is our next step? Is there 25 more cents to take out? So the program would have to check there to see if we can take out another 25 cents. But can we in this case? No, because we don't have 50 cents. So we're just going to take the first 25 cents from 41 cents. And then what do we do next?
Take 10.
Yeah, we'll take 10. How many times do we take 10? Once, yeah. And then how what do we need to do next?
Take five,
yeah. And take one. Okay. So it looks like we need to go through each of the denominations from 25 to 1 and then check to see how many coins we can take at that stage. And then during that taking, because we need to return the total number of coins, we'll add the number of coins, say, we'll add the number of, say, quarters that we've used to that total. We'll use the add the number of dimes to that total, for example. Do you get it? Does it seem pretty simple? Okay. So how would we implement this in C? What kind of constructs might we use? Yeah,
Jaden? It's a loop by forever trying a quarter until you
can't. Yeah, so we need to take as many quarters as we want, as we can. So we need to use some kind of loop. What loop might be useful here?
While,
yeah. So, pardon? I'm sorry. While. Yeah, so we use a while loop to go through. For example, we'll have our 25 cent loop. We'll have a 25 cent while loop, and it'll go through. So what would it do? I don't want to totally write the program, but what would it do?
It will look to see if the change remaining is greater than 25 cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it will go through the in each iteration of the while loop, it'll see if there are 25 cents to take, and if there are 25 cents to take, it'll take 25 cents, and then it'll add one to the total number of coins that we've used, and if not, then it'll just break out of the loop. Okay, so how can we break out of a loop? Yeah?
I guess as soon as the remaining total is smaller than 25.
Yeah, so when the total is less than 25, then we can break out of the loop using the break operator. Okay, so so we're going to end up with loops for each of the denominations, it seems. Does that sound good? Pretty good? Yeah. Okay. So so is there anything else that we need to do with this program? Once we've got the total number of coins? Yeah, so we So we were adding the number of, say, quarters, dimes, etc., to the total. So we were already adding it in the while loop. So in the end, we just need to print out the total number of coins. Okay? Does that sound good? Does anyone have any questions about making change and greedy algorithms?
Do we have to say what the combination of coins is?
No. You just need to say how many coins that we used. Yeah, good question. Yep.
Can I even count for things like if someone gives three decimal places and the last one is a zero, like 0.651?
Let's see what the spec says.
I know it mentions negative numbers.
Yeah.
That's the only thing it should.
Unless it says in the problem set, yes. Yeah, it says, of course, by nature of floating point values, your program will likely work with inputs like 9.0 and 9.000 as well. You need not worry about checking whether the user's input is formatted like money should be. Okay. So, but there's one important point. We're using floating point values, so decimal places. So we do need to make sure that we treat that correctly. Because the thing about a computer is that it can't really do floating point numbers like we can. For example, if we want to store the number 9 in a floating point value, it might actually store that as 9.00001. So that might create some errors in our program when we say, for example, check for, is that number bigger than or equal to 9? Less than or equal to 9, because it won't be less than or equal to 9. It'll be just a bit bigger than 9. So how can we get rid of these floating point problems? The problem set suggests one approach, which is to So we multiply everything by 100 and store all the data in our program as cents, and that will get rid of the floating point problem because we're no longer dealing with floating point numbers. So when you multiply the number by 100, you also want to make sure that you get rid of any spurious digits that might have appeared. So what you can do is once you've got the number multiplied by 100, you can round it to the nearest cent, and that should help get rid of any digits that you didn't need. Is that good? Pardon?
How do we round it?
Okay, so you round it using the round function. It's a function in C called round. So if you want to look up these functions, you can actually go to the great resource that's posted on the cs50.net/resources page called www.cppreference.com. It's on the course website resources. It's a great resource because C doesn't really come with a manual. There is a Unix manual that lists some functions, but to get these to see example code and to get a good overview of these basic functions, you might want to take a look at sites like cppreference.com. Okay, does anyone have any questions about making change or greedy? Yep.
Is it just coins or also like dollar bills and stuff?
This will be just coins. Yeah, because the user will be inputting, for example, 0.41 or 0.99. Okay.
So the user can input dollars, but the biggest quantity you can give them is a quarter.
Does anyone know? Ken, do you know? No. Okay. I think so because there's no you don't need to go through the dollar bills. So, right, so you can just... Yeah, okay. So you only need to do quarters. So I guess if the user types in 9.75, then they're going to have to dispense that in quarters. Yeah, okay. And also make sure that you treat negative numbers properly. If the user types in -0.41, as in the output on page 12, you're going to want to prompt the user for a new number. So you can see here that there's some kind of loop going on. If the user types in minus 0.41, then the program says, yeah, how much change is owed? So it's asking the user again and again until they enter a proper number. Okay, so one trick here, if you get caught in a loop that goes forever, how can you get out of it, when you're debugging your program?
Control C.
Yeah, Control C. So if you're running a program and then you wrote a while loop that maybe has a wrong section, while section. So for example, you might have typed in while true, do this. And while true, of course, is an infinite loop, so it's going to go on forever. So if you want to exit out of that kind of loop, then you can type in Control C, which quits any program on Unix. Okay. Okay, so if that's it, then we'll go on to the last one, which is Mario. Has everyone taken a look at the last section as well? Is everyone familiar with... Okay, no? Okay, so basically what David wants you to do is to... I'll show the PDF on the screen. Okay, so what David wants you to do is to recreate this on your black and white or black and green screen. You don't need to generate the pipe or the Mario or the text or the clouds, but you just need to do the blocks in your terminal screen. So how might we go about doing this? So we can one thing we can assume is that the width of the user's terminal will be 80 characters long. And the window will no longer be no higher than 24 characters. How can we generate this? Let's say we want to, how many blocks is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 blocks. So the user will say, I want 8 blocks high. What is this? A half pyramid that is 8 blocks high. How would you deal with that request? Yeah, so first we want to get the user's input. So int height equals get int, just as in our change program or in a ISBN program. So we get the input, and then how do we actually draw the text? It is text, but how do we draw the blocks? Well, I mean, the naive approach is to hard code it, right? So we have this huge program that says, if height equals 8, then type this out. If height equals 7, type this out. But we don't want to do that, because we're writing a program, and programs are supposed to automate things. So how do we deal with each of the eight cases? So we're not. So the height will no longer be bigger than 23 or 24, was it? 24? 23? Okay, so bearing that in mind, how are we going to generate this? Loop, yeah. So we're going to use a loop, or a series of loops, maybe, to generate this. So when I say generate this, I don't mean... So we're not going to use graphics, unfortunately, because we're in a terminal window which supports text only. So we're going to represent each of these blocks using asterisks, as it says in the problem set. Okay, so... There's one example that David likes to show, but I'm not going to show that right now. But that basically ASCII text is when you try to to represent graphics using text, and you can do that in a rather crude way by just typing a bunch of spaces where you don't want the graphic, and then typing a character, say an asterisk, where you want the character. So that's a big hint for this, because so say we want to draw the bottom line. I'm only doing the bottom line because I can't reach up. So if I want to do space, 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 star, 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 star. Does that make sense? Good? Okay. So we want to do the same for the other lines as well, right? We'll have one more space here and then one less asterisk here. Okay? Sorry. So how do we do this? We do this with a loop. So we're going from top to bottom because we can't write from bottom to up. what can we do? Do you have any ideas? Please, you're going to have to do this yourself. It's very important that you know how to do this. Yes?
You'll have to have a loop incrementing the number of spaces and decrementing the number of passwords.
Yeah. So we could have a loop that increments the number of spaces and decrements the number of stars. That's a very good approach. We can do actually even better than that. We don't even need to store the number of asterisks, because what do we know about the width of the terminal window? It's 80 characters. So what we can do is 80 minus the number of spaces minus 1 to get the number of blocks. Okay, so it looks like we need only increment one number as we go down the lines. Does that make sense? So in short, we have one loop that goes through each of the lines one by one, and then it knows how many spaces and how many stars to draw because it has the current line number. And there's a relationship, there's a sort of mathematical relationship between the number of spaces and the number of asterisks and the current line number. Okay? Is that good? So how do we print out, say, 100 spaces? Pardon? I'm sorry. Yeah. So you mean like print that, like press space 100 times?
No. If you just have to write one space, mm-hmm. Would you do a
print f
and then just have like an empty space?
Yeah, print f space, and then you'd print out one space. Mm-hmm. So you do that 100 times using a loop to loop over that. Okay. So inside the loop that goes through each of the lines in our graphic, we're going to have to use two more loops, a loop that prints out spaces and a loop that prints out stars. Is that good? So we're going to have three loops. And, oh, sorry, that's my screensaver. So we're going to have two loops inside one loop. Okay, does that sound good? Yeah, Jason?
What's the main loop, like what's the overarching loop?
The main loop will go through each of the lines. So say if the user typed in, I want 23 lines, then for I equals 0, I smaller than or equals to 23, I plus plus. Okay, so going from 0 to, 22, because we're counting from 0. Okay? Yeah.
Can you say that again? How you answered the question?
We're talking about how we go through each of the lines, and then I talked about a for loop that would go from 0. They would count from 0 to 22, say if the user typed in 23. And do you all know why it's 22 and not 23? Is everyone okay with that? It's because we're counting from 0. It's just that. It's very simple. Okay, any more questions about this? And yes? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you still need the two loops to do those two different things?
You could be more clever and say if the current column is less than some number, then print out spaces. If the current column is bigger than some number, then print out asterisks. Is that what you were trying to hint at?
Okay.
Yeah, you could have two loops.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
But how would you say this column?
So you would count the columns by using. So for in your loop, in your second loop, in your inner loop, you're going to be incrementing another number, right? For example, j. So we can say if j is less than this number. I'll leave it up to you to calculate the actual the variable. But does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So. So basically, we're going like this. Get it? So we're going from up to right and then down to right. OK? So and also, do make sure to check that the user's input is valid. If the user types in a negative number, then obviously we can't have a negative number of height. So reject that. And if the user types in a number bigger than 23, because a window isn't supposed to be bigger than 23, then reject that as well. So can you tell me how you would repeatedly get a user's input until they enter the correct one? Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's completely correct. So we use a do while loop. In the do loop, in the do section, we collect the data from the user in a variable, and then in while we check if that that data that the user inputted is valid. And if it is valid, we'll return true, and then we'll return false, and then the loop will exit. And then if the data the user inputted was not correct, then we'll return true. And then it'll go back to the do loop and do it over again. So it's important to use a do while loop and not a while do loop. Why? What's the difference? There's a subtle difference between do while and while do.
You want it to run the first time?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's completely correct. So we want to say, we don't want to just say to get. So the thing about the while loop is the while do loop is that it checks first because while comes first. While something something, then do something. Because we want the user's input at least once, we're not going to get away with getting the user's input zero times. So we want to get it, the user's input first and then run a while check on it. Does anyone have any questions? Any thoughts? Any comments? It can be for any other section of the problem set as well. No? Okay. If not, then that's the end of walkthrough one. If you want to come back, then please come to walkthrough two, which will be next week at the same time at 6 o'clock here. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming. And if you have any questions, I'll be right outside around the red sofas. Hi.